9 5 6 4 3 2 1 Call me on the phone and make we have some fun. 809-7564321. Call me on the phone and make we have some fun. You get down my number.
Welcome to another Sunday afternoon show with Caribbean Radio Show, the Knowledge Station, keeping you informed. As usual, we give you updates on the coronavirus and try to keep persons abreast of what's happening in Jamaica. And for those of you who live overseas, we'd love to hear from you. I'm sure you also want answers as to what's happening in Jamaica here. Well, Jamaica has several cases of the coronavirus and lots of other stuff answering, but before I go to the line, I see it's well lit. I can tell you that this is a station where you will learn a lot about the virus and other things that are happening here. Our Caribbean Radio Station is also giving away scholarships to our students in Jamaica at university level and the regular high schools. So if you want to make your contribution in Sync with Palace organization, feel free to go to our page. Let me go to my first caller. You're live on air. Good afternoon, caller. Press 1 on your keypad. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, my caller. Press 1 on your keypad. Oh, there's another person online. Good afternoon, caller.
Good afternoon.
Live with Caribbean. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Thank you.
You're good. Okay. Who am I talking to?
This is Dr. Judy Shaw Rice.
Oh, Dr. Judy, how are you? You're calling all the way from the States, right?
I'm calling from, yes, Texas, Houston, Texas.
Okay. Oh, good. Oh, that's Dr. Shaw.
Yes.
Okay, you're the medical board certified internal medicine, I believe. Master's in medical management.
Yes.
Certified physician executive. Welcome to our show. What's happening in your side of the world today?
You know, we're all going through this coronavirus, and in this state, as in Texas, as in many states, as of Friday, they have opened up part of the economy, allowing about 25% of occupancy in some of the areas. Not all the states, and many other countries have not opened up. You know, there are some who have, and this is, you know, very controversial in many arenas.
Wow. I can imagine, because I've watched it on your televisions, and I noticed, and would you say that's a safe thing to do? Because you might feel that persons are getting better and the virus, the rate of crisis is going down, but is it a smart thing to do? Because I think that persons would only get more infected. And persons have been getting reinfected. I saw a case where a lady in the health field, she got reinfected and she died as a result of it.
Right. You know what? The problem with this virus is it's so novel. It's so new. You know, even though it's been around for a few months, as far as we know, at least in humans. And, you know, we've done lots of studies in many different countries. We still don't know a lot about it. So it's different from, you know, there are four other coronaviruses that cause the common flu, the sniffles and the sneezes and the things that we call the cold that we've had for a long time. So this is in that same family, and it's different from some other viruses. This is what you call an RNA virus. And what happens, that one is very easy to mutate. So its major characteristic is the fact that it can change. And because of that, it's very hard for us to study it and treat it because it's constantly changing. Right now, they think we have about 8 or 9 different strains. We started off with about 1, then 3 when it came to the U.S., and now it's about 8 or 9. So being able to come up with a vaccine for that is going to be very, very difficult. And figuring out how to do it is also going to be very difficult. So to your question about safety, it's a very difficult question to answer. So is it safe? For the great majority of the population, I would say no. However, you know, we have to consider lots of things. We do have to consider economy. We have to consider social isolation. You know, we have to consider things like mental health. There's lots of things to be considered. If our countries not only practiced social isolation, but also had methods to contact or individuals who have a very organized, strategically planned method of contacting contacts to then very easily curtail their little nidus of infection, then, you know, we would get some progress, but that's challenging in many areas, challenging to find the actual bodies to do these, people who are able to do this. You know, but it's been proven in different areas, different countries, that this does work. Countries like New Zealand and Australia that have 0 to no cases left, you know. So it's been proven that it does work. But it takes a lot of responsibility and a lot of personal responsibility.
Yes, I can imagine how difficult it is, because the United States, being as large as it is, you know, with so many loopholes, how could you really prevent persons from going in and out of communities? You know, the persons have to be very, very disciplined and want to. And I find that illiteracy is not only in a third world country or in other places. Illiteracy is right around the world, right around the clock. You know?
Yes, and let's just understand about literacy. So literacy doesn't just mean ability to read and write, okay?
Exactly.
Because as it relates to health literacy. That's completely different from literacy as going to school and learning how to write your name, because some people can be extremely illiterate with many decades of education, but completely illiterate when it comes to health. And so that's the issue. You know, we had battled with this conversations about it's not as bad as flu. Flu is worse. You know, so the education of the population has been a true challenge.
Yeah, because persons are really trying to hide from the truth. They wonder if all of this is for real. And because it's not something that you can actually see, they figure more or less that they have a chance of getting away from this. Dr. Shaw, the lines are lighting up. You don't mind getting calls from persons asking you questions or anything? Somebody might be on the line that might want to ask you a question. So could I put you on hold for a second and answer the call?
Yes, I would.
Okay, good. Thank you. Oh, and we have another caller here. Good afternoon, caller.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the good doctor of chiming in. I'm sure you're taking very best care of yourself, and thank you for everything that you are doing, and absolutely thank you for coming to give us some of your valid information that certainly would help us. Question, I have a couple of questions for you. When we talk about vaccines do take a long time for rigorous testing, and especially you have a virus we know nothing about, basically, if we can believe our government, and I have to stick that in there. How is it that we're going to get a vaccine? Normally the vaccine may take with vigorous, human subject will take at least 18 months to figure out what is effective doses and how it affects certain people for us to get that right amount of whatever it is that protects us, that protects the immunity. If we're going to rush into this right now because we have some preliminary results that may look good, how is it that we're going to break all the rules to get a vaccine in a rush? Do you think that that is the way to go, or we have no other choice? That's the first question.
Well, a great question. Thank you. Boy, that's such a hot topic. So you're right. Many things that you said. The vaccine normally will take quite a while to develop, and for this virus in particular, as I mentioned, it's a very mutagenic, means it can change its format many times, and it's going to be difficult for us to get a vaccine that's going to stick. You're right, it can take 18 plus months to develop a vaccine. The first prediction was that we wouldn't get a vaccine before the first of next year, but we have heard out of Oxford that we may get one come September, October. But the thing is that we have a lot of questions. You're right. So there has not been the mass testing. So there are a lot of questions about that. How immunogenic is it? Is it going to, how much is it going to prevent? How long is it going to prevent? We don't have those questions. My thinking is that I'm not quite sure how successful this vaccine is going to be. I believe most folks are a little bit leery-eyed about the success of this particular vaccine. And you have to understand as well, this is a situation industry where everybody wants answers now, because everybody wants to be protected, everybody wants to get back to their lives, nobody wants their family members or themselves to die. And so everybody's jumping at the bit, and it's quite a race to get these vaccines and treatments out. That being said, you do want to make sure you've conformed with the safety regulations and that sort of thing. So how are they able to bypass this? You know, funny enough, some of the regulatory agencies have lacked some of their requirements because of the need for this rapidity and haste. Safety is always a number one. They've done tests. Have they done enough tests? I don't have the answer for that. Many would say not really, because it is very fast for this vaccine to come to the fore. You know, there's a lot of speculation about the safety and efficacy. Not so much safety is one, but
yeah,
even going to work. You know, and the problem when you have that is you give some people a false sense of security. Oh, I've been vaccinated, now I'm good to go. You know, that's probably not going to be the case.
What we look at hydroxychloroquine and we see they were thinking that this was the answer and everybody had the upbeat, and we're realizing that this is probably causing more harm than good. Now we have another one that they're mass producing the vaccine now, and we still don't have the efficacy and the research is not sound. So are we bound to get into more difficult situations down the line that where the health is going to be compromised even more? Now,
yeah,
my last question, if these folks who have this virus now seems to develop little immunity, or we don't know how long the immunity is for, now those people, if this virus comes back in the winter, those people who did not get any immunity or exposure to this virus, and we understand when a virus comes back, it comes back, I mean, morphed into something else, and the virility is so much more potent. How are people who did not get, do you have any cause to believe that this is going to adversely affect folks who did not get the virus or not exposed now, coming into the winter time if this happens?
Right. So, you know, there's not an answer to that question, but there are three different proposals as how this whole virus thing is going to work in the next 2021. And, you know, we believe that this is going to be around come 2022, because it's going to take different bumps and, you know, peaks and valleys. So the idea that, you know, come summertime, this is all going to die down and everything's going to be fine, well, we don't know that because we don't know how this virus is going to weather the heat and different surfaces and that sort of thing. Yes, we do know that the humidity will sort of hamper the disbursement of droplets, which is how this is predominantly passed. This virus, as you said, can morph, and it is very, you know, and the virility of it is substantial. The problem is, you know, as you said correctly, again, is that how many people are going to be infected, but most of them are not. We think that at least 50% of the population has to be, 50 or more percent of the population has to be infected for this thing to die down when you get into this possibility of herd immunity. We probably have maybe 20% of the population worldwide that's been infected with this virus, whether they've been infected and showed the disease signs, or whether they have been infected and asymptomatic and show no signs. Either way, we think that. So that being said, then you can understand if even a little bit of folks are infected, then come December now, or come more conducive weather, then yeah, we are going to get another surge, and many believe it's going to be worse than the one we currently have. In particular, because human nature is that after this sort of little bit kind of gets a little bit died down, a little bit, people are going to be very lax in their social distancing and their health hygiene, and then of course we're going to get a big surge. So there's different models that are out there. So a huge surge again, kind of like 1918 when we had an epidemic. A huge surge again. Worse than the one that we have now. And then we're going to get a few more bumps into the 2021, 20, 2022, and other models show that we're just constantly going to get this ebb and flow, this peak and valley, all about the same, you know, for the next 2-3 years. And then others show that we kind of going to get the ebb and flow, but then we're just gradually going to die out, hopefully by that time herd immunity and vaccine comes around. So, you know, everything you said is correct. You're right on the money. You know, we don't have any particular answers. We have a lot of speculation. But by and large, most people believe that we're not over here. We're not over the hill. And the next surge is possibly going to be worse than the first. Than the, well, the first being the one that we're currently in.
Thanks, Doc. Thank you. I may have a few questions moving on, but I'm giving somebody else the chance. Thank you so much for answering that. Thank you.
Okay. I hope you were well informed. Doc was she covered most areas, I think. Thank you so much for calling. You're live on Caribbean Radio Show. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, caller. Press 1 on your 954-233. Good afternoon.
Oh, hi.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Very good.
Good. I'm
What's on your mind this afternoon?
Thank you. Just
okay.
Listening to what's happening in the community, calling from South Florida.
Okay. What's on your mind? What's happening in your neck of the wood? We have Dr. Shaw live with us. If there are any concerns that you might have, you can always ask her any question you want to ask her.
No, she covered
most of what you had.
Questions that I would have had on the call a while ago. She answered it extremely comprehensively. So
yes.
We can just continue to take all necessary precautions. I guess we'll be living with the mask and gloves. Do gloves really help is one of my questions. Is that needed?
You know, gloves do, because here's the thing. By and large, the virus is, as I said, and as everybody else has said, as you know, it's passed on by a droplet, coughing, sneezing. It's this kind of thing. You know, the six feet distance, you know, that we've talked about, some immunologists and some studies show that the virus can actually be projected 30 feet a distance. We also know that this virus can be transmitted fecal-oral, meaning going to the bathroom and not adequately cleaning, washing yourself, things like this. You know, the virus can be transmitted by that kind of contact. And also, the virus, depending on which studies you look at, can live on inanimate objects anywhere from, 72 hours up to 9 days. So you can imagine if you're going to use the restroom and things aren't quite as hygiene, and so this can be passed on from one person to another person. In particular, if you're in the healthcare environment, you're a staff member, you're within the nursing or physician or nurse, whatever, and you have to be cleaning a patient and all this sort of thing. Yes, it's absolutely important. And of course, changing gloves, between one and the next. Outside of that, even handling packages coming from the mail, UPS, and other places like that, FedEx, whatever. Again, you don't always know where folks have been, and if the virus can last that long, then there's a risk that you can pass, that you can get it. Now, we don't know how much virus it takes to actually get an infection. I mean, being simplistic, does it take 1? Does it take 10? Does it take 100? I don't know. But but we do know that it can't be transmitted that way, and so yes, gloves definitely can help to mitigate that transmission, which we just don't know. We don't have too much control.
That is true. Thank you so much. True.
Thank you so much for calling, Paula.
Thank you.
Can I try and since I'm still on, can I add to that also that I think when a lot of people wear gloves, they have this false security that they are protected, and only that their hand that is in the glove is protected against what is being touched. But
right.
They are using the glove to touch other surfaces that might not be contaminated if they touch a contaminated surface. So you are using that false sense of security. My hands are clean, but you are using a glove that you touch a contaminated place,
yeah.
You touch your face, you touch another place that is contaminated.
Yes.
I mean, I'm always thinking that if we think more washing our hands after we touch certain places for the required 20-second washing our hands properly, making sure our nails are clean, making sure as much as possible we change the lifestyle of touching our face and our mouth and our ears and all offices that maybe are moist where a bacteria or a virus can grow, then we will be doing a much better job at times of wearing a glove. If we're
yes.
not, we have to be trained to wear a glove to understand the danger we also are going to be putting ourselves into.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with you. Yeah, absolutely 100% agree with you. And honestly, all these barrier mechanisms, masks, gloves, all these things, you know, these are, as you correctly stated, they can give you a false sense of security. You may be protected underneath, but you can still transmit depending on where you've been, where you're going. So, you know, so I think hygiene and just being cognizant of where you are and what you need to do, I think, is going to be very important. And that gets back to what one of the things we touched on initially, which is that health literacy. And that has nothing to do with, you know, how well you read and write. So health literacy and being knowledgeable is what this is going to really come down to. And also, I will just touch on this too, as you know, the cohort of people who are getting infected and, not necessarily infected, but getting infected and sick, is really amongst those who unfortunately are most vulnerable with medical conditions and diseases, and of course our elderly. And so, you know, this is a time for us to recognize what our risk factors are for all diseases, even flu. The influenza has a predilection for that cohort of people as well. So, you know, this is a time for us to sort of reflect on our overall health and our, you know, our overall wellness and how we live our lives going forward. In fact, COVID is going to change our lives in almost every aspect going forward.
I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doc, another question, and I seem like I'm hanging up your line, Miss Connie. I'm sorry, but I'm just so eager to learn. what do you think, Doc? We need bacteria, we need viruses, because these are, I always think that we are bacteria and viruses put together. We need bacteria and viruses to survive. Do you think we're going to be over-cleaning, over-killing with these different sterilization in a lot of cases? We are going to be living in a sterile society. So therefore, we are going to be prone to a lot of other complications.
That's a great point, but I don't think anything so, but yes, we do have bacteria in our gut and places like that help to fight other bacteria. You know, we do have good bacteria, as they say, that help us fight other things. I don't think so, because, you know, unless we ingest, and God forbid, you know, we follow recent news, God forbid we ingest things, you know, for the most part, we're not going to clean out much of what's happening down, you know, in our system. So, good point. But, no, I don't think that the hygiene that we're trying to purport, which, by the way, is really something we should have always been doing all the time. But,
exactly.
You know, this hygiene that we're trying to teach and get to become mainstream, you know, I don't think so. Now, one of the things as it relates to other viruses, like I said, you know, we have four other coronaviruses that are on and about, the common cold, the flu, well, not flu, sorry, common cold, these kinds of things that we get, you know, all the time. You know, we, for the most part, most of us are, most people have gotten these things, and these things are, most of us are immune to a certain number of these things. As I said, they do mutate, these RNA viruses, so we get a new one every, you know, fall or something like that. So, you know, I don't think that we really are going to put ourselves at harm by practicing and learning and making these things common practice to the cleanliness, washing hands, being cognizant of how you cough into your elbow if you don't have a mask on, you know, those kinds of things which you should be doing anyway. And I think it's, you know, the young kids coming up, hopefully they'll learn this. You know, we don't have to get into the problem of unlearning bad habits. So hopefully those kids and stuff coming up will learn things the right way going forward. It's just us old folks that have to unlearn bad habits.
Yes, that's true. Yes, so I hope we have learned a lot today.
Can I ask one more question, Ms. Connie?
Sure.
Now, for instance, we've been hearing that the meat plants are being closed down because the infection rate there. Should we concern that maybe if people are being infected with meat that has all kind of a liquidy stuff and exposed to your hands and sneeze and all of that, should we be concerned that our meat probably are going to be infected somewhat?
Well, the whole meat plant thing really started with the people, the handlers of the people who are working there, the handlers. These people were found to be, you know, infected. And you know, so that was the purpose of shutting that down. You know, how much of the actual meat became infected, not quite sure. But also, don't really know how this virus, if at all, really is going to live in, you know, a non-living entity or non-living being, with the exception of being on the surface of the, just like any other surface. You know, but I think with the appropriate measures, that can be removed. But outside of it being on the surface, as with any other type of surface, with the virus settling on, I don't think, unlike any other kinds of diseases and bacteria and things that we have gotten over the years that are in the meat, because these animals ate these things that that had these viruses, parasites, whatnot in them, and so thereby eating those the meat got infected. But this way, I really don't think that we're going to see a huge amount. Assuming we take the precautions to, quote, cleanse the meat before it gets into production. But I think it was smart for them to shut things down and test these workers, which, again, is another thing they actually should have been doing from day one. But, you know, but so I think that's kind of how that is. So is our meat going to be at risk going forward? I'm not quite sure that I can say yes. I think our FDA and people, at least you know, in this country, and I think in other countries as well, they have some sort of a measures for this feeding food. And now, of course, it comes into play if you get food that is off the street and you buy things that way, that does not, that the food doesn't go through these measures. And now there may be some concern, you know, there, taking your question to a different level. But as it relates to the regulated means of acquiring meat and food, you know, I think they have taken, you know, the various precautions to try to cleanse this meat. You know, again, comes to the issue of mass testing, which we in the U.S. and other countries, you know, we have not done on huge, most of the U.S., haven't done on huge huge measures, sadly. I think all of the industries that deal with either people or deal with things that have to go to people, as in food, vegetables, fruit, things like this, those people should all be tested and followed to make sure that they either are not infected or not that are not sick.
I agree.
We hadn't done that previously. Fortunately, we are getting hip to that, but, you know, it's a day late.
And I guess, can I just say something here? I guess yes. Even if the meat is infected, like if somebody who works in a meat shop and they handle the meat, once it's cooked,
yes.
I think that would itself would kill the virus. And as a matter of fact, I would imagine that if it goes in your stomach, the enzymes and whatever would kill it.
Correct. The reality of this coronavirus, by the way, is very easy to kill, which is why disinfectants can kill it. Okay.
Oh, that's why we were told to drink the bleach and the Lysol and all of that. And I understand that persons that actually started ingesting bleach.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that was.
That's unfortunate, but it is very easy to kill. So cooking, definitely, it's done for. It doesn't survive that. There are viruses that are difficult to kill, but this is not one of them.
Oh, man. I trust that my callers have been well informed. You understand perfectly what's going down. Thank you so much.
In Jamaica now, do you know the count? I don't know if it was
the count.
Yeah, the count.
It has gone up actually, and we, as it is now, it's 463 persons that are testing positive. We did a overall test of 5,215. Where 463 persons are positive, negative 4,716. But we have other persons in isolation and the quarantine.
Okay.
We have, and 8 persons died, unfortunately. And recovery rate so far is like 8. 8 persons died and 33 persons have recovered in their home. Of the persons who have tested positive, we have 2 persons who are critical in hospital and 6 moderately ill. The others, they have treated. They have treated and they are watching to see.
Okay.
Because I understand I don't know if I'm correct, Doc, but most persons that get the virus, they recover so far.
You know, it's really, the stats are that 80% of the people, 80% of the people won't, that get infected with the virus can be taken care of as outpatient. And then of the remaining 20%, about 15% of those who are hospitalized have moderate disease and can be discharged. It's only about 5% of them that actually are the ones that are on this ventilator and to be, you know, the ICU, the very sick people. So it's actually a very small percentage of the people who actually are getting infected with this virus. The problem is, and this is why people, you know, this is why there's this argument of, well, flu kills more people, and this is why there's been this thing. The problem with that line of thought is that this virus is very virulent, more virulent than the flu, meaning that, you know, its path of infection to sickness and death is much more catastrophic than that of the flu. And it's very easily spread. That's the big problem. It's very easily spread, and it's spread, and not only that, it's spread by people who show no disease, no symptoms. So that makes it that much more
very dangerous
than the flu. Correct. Very dangerous than the flu. So it's really a beast.
And can I say something here?
Yes. Sure.
Can I say something? Okay. We had an incident here. We have a large company with nearly 800 persons working. One person went in and everybody got infected. A lot of persons got infected because most of the cases that we have, why we had the spike in this thing here is because those persons are from that center. And they had to close that parish. And persons actually ran away the very night that it was announced that they were going to be on lockdown. A lot of persons escaped. These are young people who really don't understand. They're not dons. They're educated, went to school. But I don't know how. They ran, actually literally ran. You know Manchester. You're from Jamaica. Everybody's from Jamaica.
Yes.
Right. And what I find happened is that persons ran as far as to Manchester, to St. Anne. And the police, they had a hard time trying to track them down, and they're still trying to track a few people. They opened up back the community, and that's where the problem lies. Because what is going to happen is that they have not finished getting a hold of everybody to treat them, and they're still in hiding. So hopefully they're not sick. Hopefully
right.
They're not sick. I see,
you know,
my life. Pardon me? Go ahead.
Yeah, the thing about this virus, too, it's so difficult. I mean, you have all these, there's so much speculation. You have all these things about, you know, do people, especially those who are elderly, and not even those who are elderly, but anybody who has chronic diseases, medical conditions, you know, the question is, do they die of or do they die with COVID, and so there's a lot of controversy of you know, putting it on the death certificate. You know, there's a lot of people who are not making it to the hospital, and so they've never been tested, and so you don't really know. You're just making assumptions. Which is in the environment that we're in, it's not an unusual assumption to make. So it gives you a question of numbers. You know, how accurate are the numbers, and you know, that's serious discussion, and in many countries trying to compare one to the other. I think people trying to, you know, run away from, whether physically run away or figuratively, you know, run away from getting the virus, you know, you don't know if you actually are the one who's transporting the virus.
Exactly. You know, I see my dashboard lighting up. Can you take another call or two? Let me welcome somebody else as well. Do you think we have enough doctors working in hospitals all over?
As
we speak right now, we have a foundation, Palace Foundation, which we're trying to raise funds for through this organization and CSR radio station to raise awareness, all Jamaicans, persons all over the world, to contribute to their country by giving into the foundation, because each year we give away scholarships to the university students. Because this year we want to school 100 doctors or more, healthcare workers, phlebotomists, nurses, EMTs, you name it. We need more people, and we have to get something done. Which you could tell your friends to tap into this organization where we are helping people to get out of this gutter. If God help us, if something like this happens again. Can I invite somebody else to our chat room, our room?
Yes.
Okay, hang on one second there. Caller, good afternoon. Welcome to Caribbean Radio Station. What's on your mind?
Seven one six.
Good afternoon, caller. You're live on Caribbean Radio. We have Dr. Shaw here with us this afternoon. Say that again.
Hi, Connie, this is Ricardo. I'm not sure if you're referring to me.
Ricardo. Welcome, Ricardo, to our show. We have Dr. Shaw and others listening in right now. If there are any questions you'd like to ask her about the coronavirus, or if there are any concerns you have, if you have relatives in Jamaica, feel free to ask her any questions.
Yeah, I have a couple.
Okay. Welcome.
All right. So one of my biggest concern is the fact that, you know, money, currency, changing hands so frequently. Does the virus transfer from money to people or no?
Good question. So it can, being money is an inanimate object just like anything else, tabletops and anything else. So you could conceivably transmit the virus from one person to another person if the one is infected by the handling of money. And as I had mentioned earlier, this virus can last on these surfaces for many days. So that is conceivable. There are some locations, countries who have designed to use non-paper currency and just digital currency. I don't know how that's working out worldwide, but you know, there are some countries in the Eastern Asia areas that are resigning to use those methods of payment. But yes, you're correct. It is a potential.
Okay, so if it's a potential, why are we not seeing more countries going cashless during this pandemic?
You know, that's a great question, and there's a question in discussion. There are some countries who are going cashless, as I mentioned. The potential for countries like the United States and other countries of that size makes it difficult. Also, the problem in some other countries, some third world countries, some non-first world countries, you know, not everybody has the electronics. Not everybody has a credit card. Not everybody has a bank account. And so the ability to transfer from your bank account to the merchant may not be feasible if you don't have a bank account. So that's one of the problems many of these countries have faced, is that not everybody has a bank account. Not everybody has a credit card. So the going cashless would be very... would not be very sustainable for resource allocation and buying things, sustaining livelihood and that sort of thing. So that's one of the problems that many of these countries have faced. That's not something that they can incorporate in their lifestyle nationally or even globally for that matter. Because there's a huge sector of people who don't have that luxury.
Okay.
That is true, because of in the rural areas of Jamaica and other places, you have persons who don't have the first cent together. They purchase daily. They buy breakfast, lunch, dinners at a shop daily, way up in the hills. As you know, we're all Jamaicans, and you know that is what happens. You know, you have the elderly to think about. They don't have the idea what's going on, some of them, because one of them was asked this question, you know what is happening around you? And he said, me know, one something named virus. And another person said, you know how to care for that? Yes, you wash your hand with water. That's it. That's it. That's what they say, just wash it. So they have to go out again and try and educate these people, help them along the way. We've been trying to work with the elderly, trying to help them. My dashboard is lighting up. Can I take another call? Have we answered your questions, caller? Are you happy with the answer? What's that?
It's not a matter of being happy. It's just, you know, something to think about, you know.
Preparing
for the next pandemic, if there's another one within our lifetime.
Sure.
I think China was one of the countries that they were burning cash over there. You know.
Is that a fact? Is that really so, Rico? Is that really so?
Yeah. Yeah, they were reported that they were burning cash just to you know, contain the pandemic.
Yes,
that is
the case. Yeah. But again, you know, that you know, China is a very highly regulated country. I mean, they, you know, whatever your belief is in the political system, they have that uniformity and homogeneity to be able to, you know, put forth rules and laws and people follow them, you know. Unfortunately, you're dealing in a more free society, more democratic society, you don't have that ability. I mean, again, a politics society, you know, unfortunately you have a lot of different what's happening in the United States. People are demonstrating. I mean, so, you know, you have, you just don't have that uniformity, and that unfortunately plagues your success.
Right. I have another burning question I want to ask you really, really quick.
Okay. Go ahead.
You know that the entire world, there's a stigma right now surrounding vaccines right now. There's a stigma, there's a conspiracy theory going on, all of that. Now, if at some point they could develop a vaccine for the coronavirus, how is it that you educate the masses and get them to accept that, hey, this is not bad for you, but this is the only way forward?
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's unique to coronavirus vaccine. I think those people of that ilk tend to have that opinion regardless of which vaccine it is. You know, yeah, there is a lot of controversy. There is a lot of there are some conspiracy theories and all of this about the viruses. About the vaccines. You know, from an educational standpoint, the fact of the matter is that there have been many studies that vaccines do save lives. You know, I mean, we've had decades, centuries of diseases that have been eradicated over the years. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is vaccines do save lives. Is it a possibility that an individual can have a reaction to a vaccine? Of course. You know, can they have a reaction to shrimp? Well, yes. Can they have a reaction to eating tomato? Of course. So can they have a reaction to eating vaccines? They could. Okay, but when you're looking at, you know, the value of the vaccines across a nation versus those individuals who may have a reaction, as you know, you can have an allergic reaction to anything. The value of the vaccine generally outweighs the concerns. Now, of course, as it relates to one of the initial questions with the safety of the vaccine, now that's very important. You know, and making sure that the vaccine has gone through the various different phases of investigation. Now, that's imperative. I think if you don't have that and you rush the vaccine, this particular vaccine out, not others, but and if you rush the vaccine out, then, yeah, you're going to have a, you're really going to flare up the skepticism amongst the people, and unfortunately that's going to plague vaccines. The reality of the situation is right now we have about 70 to 80 different vaccines around the world that are currently in the labs. And the reality is that when you have this kind of thing, 97% of these vaccines don't ever make it out of the lab. Okay? So there's a lot of vaccines out there that are being tried and we are coming up with. Most of these things are not really going to be successful anyhow. And, you know, I really don't know that this Oxford vaccine coming out in, you know, in September is going to be the one. You know, I don't know. It certainly is on skates, you know, and it's coming out of the blocks really fast. You know, it really hasn't had the time to prove its worth.
Right.
So, I mean, is it safe? Obviously, they're going to, that's one of the number one things they're going to say. There's three phases of testing. So one, is it safe? So they're going to have to make sure it's safe. And so is it safe? It's definitely going to have passed that. The second one, is it effective? Now, that's the one we don't know for sure. So, you know, You're right. There's a lot of controversy about vaccines, and those who don't want to do vaccines just won't do vaccines. You know, sometimes you can't convince certain people. But the fact is, vaccines save lives.
Hey, darling.
Right.
Okay, good. I hope that answers your question for you.
Yes.
Can I take another call? I would like to take another call. The lines are really lighting up today.
Just Terry from Chicago. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. How is it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. And thanks for taking my call. I just have a – there's just so many questions about this coronavirus, and I just want to get your opinion on at least one topic that's very hot right now with the statistic with, you know, what's going on as far as death. Now, you know, we all know this is not a race to see how many people die faster, you know. So, but they always say that a large population of the black community is dying off faster and had a higher risk. Now, we all know in different areas there's certain numbers of black community that's not that large as, you know, the white community or other race. And I think a lot of people, when they hear that, they get scared, you know, because, and I'm believing, in my opinion, that a lot of, especially people in the black community don't really, might understand those numbers and you know, the stigma with a black person as far as health-wise and things like that, you know, it's and racism and everything else that comes along. I mean, how important is it to really understand those numbers? Because, again, you know, if you get too stressed, that's going to deteriorate your health, you know, not
yes.
only your physical but your mental health. So
okay.
how do we go about to get the correct information, say, to the black community, you know, so they could at least be in a better health, mental health, physical health, state of mind, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean,
this is a great question, and it's a very prevalent question, but I want to make sure that I'm understanding your question. Are you asking how to educate the black community, or are you asking why there is a preponderance of the black folks who are getting sick, or I'm trying to make sure I know what the question is exactly.
How to... I know it was like a lot of questions, but how to educate the black community? You know, what's your opinion on how to go about that?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and you know, the short answer is this: we in healthcare and in healthcare education, population health, we have to realize, and it's not just black community, Hispanic, Asian, all kinds of folks, we have to realize that there are many different cultural variances as it relates to people understanding diseases, how diseases spread, and how you
yeah.
get diseases, and how and if the vaccines, and vaccines, to the previous caller question, so vaccines help, don't help, and why should I get a vaccine? So I think that's one of the areas that we have to understand from an educational standpoint, how the message needs to be delivered depending on who is receiving the message. And so we can't just give a blanket statement and think that everybody is going to receive it the same way. We have to understand that. But also we have to appreciate our various different communities. And, you know, when you're dealing with health and population health, you have to understand economics of certain communities. You have to appreciate how people interact from a family standpoint and all of that. And so I think reaching our communities predominantly black communities, brown and black communities, is being able to appreciate this kind of thing. There's a lot of reliance in this communities on family, network in family, and so to try to tell families to stay apart and social distancing, it's very difficult sometimes amongst some of these families in some of these categories. And so, again, you have to appreciate that. And so ramping up your testing in these populations, I think, is key, because you have to appreciate and understand how they socialize. You know, for example, barbershops. I mean, you know, that's a place that is predominantly people of black descendants. You know, so what do you do? Well, you know, you ramp up your, if you know they're going to go there, then you ramp up your testing in these kinds of areas. You know, you, and in those surroundings, I shouldn't be opening at this point, nonetheless. However, you know, so I think that's how you educate, you know, people in certain different ethnic groups, racial, ethnic, however you want to categorize. It's to be able to understand how they socialize and how they interact and go through that way. For example, churches is a huge, you know, it's a huge pillar in the black community. So utilizing the churches from an educational standpoint would be huge. I'm not saying congregations and having church as we know it, because that's still not allowed. However, we can use the churches as an influence. So, you know, you need to use the methods which these communities rely on. And those are, you know, those are a few of them.
Yeah. And to me, you know, I'm 42. I have two children. And my most important thing is to stay healthy for them, you know. And I have a little bit more understanding as far as, you know, how things work as far as in the medical field with, you know, not understanding the medical field, but as an engineer myself, I understand that they go through a lot of training and things like that, you know. But I've noticed a lot in my community that the biggest thing is trust. Like,
yes.
How can I trust that doctor? How
yes.
can I trust what they're saying when they always – like ramp up bad things, you know, every time you turn on the news, it's always
yeah.
in the south side somewhere, something's going
right.
on.
And you're
kidding.
Very right. You're very right. Yeah. Unfortunately, in the black community, the biggest barrier to healthcare literacy is trust. And that is going,
yeah.
you know, we're not going to go into a history lesson here, but that's going back years and years and years and years of reasoning how that occurred. So that actually, from a cultural education and cultural competence standpoint, is the number one barrier in this. It's not the same in Asia. It's not the same in brown communities, Hispanic. But in African-American or African or black ethnicity, it's trust. And there's reasons why, you know, decades and centuries of, but so there are reasons why. But nonetheless, yes, you have to get over that barrier. And, you know, and I think folks within the community, you know, people within the community trust their own folks in their community, and so you need to really mobilize folks within the community to be the ones who are doing the education, to being the ones who are encouraging people to, you know, to get tested, to get masks, the cleanliness, hygiene, and sort of that. So you need to utilize those people within the community, and you know, they say healthcare is local, so you need to maintain that local community contact in order to educate. Having someone outside coming to a predominantly black, brown or black community to educate usually is not as successful. So you are right there. Resources is a problem, motivation is a problem, and getting volunteers at this point is a problem.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling, caller.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
I hope you learned something. Thank you. Stay tuned. Dr. Shaw, thank you for – let me just take one other call now. You're live on
Hi.
The Caribbean Radio Show. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good evening. How are you, Ms. Connie?
I'm very good, thank you.
How
is it going?
I'm listening to you. It's going good down here in Allegheny, man. Going really, really good. Nice beach day today, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I listened to your last couple of callers, and I actually was going to be commenting a little bit about the education part of it. But listening to the last two callers, the caller before him was talking about conspiracy theories and what do they do considering conspiracy theories. Well, my philosophy have always been on conspiracy theories is don't listen to them and don't click on their link. Because guess what? That's exactly what conspiracy theories do. The second caller and the doctor, you know, confirmed that trust aspect of it. Talk about trust and they talk about vaccines. Well, let me ask you something. You talk about if a vaccine comes out today, how do we trust it or the conspiracy theories that are out there? Well, look, we've had this flu vaccine for decades now, right? How many people resist the flu vaccine every single year and will not take it because of conspiracy theories and because of lack of trust? Tons of them. So
yes.
The bottom line is this. If a vaccine comes out for this virus, some people say September, I don't see that happening. But if it does, it's up to you. You either take the virus, take the vaccine, or you don't. If you don't, chances are, you know, look, right here in Jamaica, we're expecting up to 2 million people to be affected by the virus.
You're right.
Okay?
You're correct.
That's what we're expecting.
Yes.
In our cases right now, the fact of the matter is I am probably going to get the virus at some point in time. What people need to understand is that we're not trying to stop the spread right now. We're trying to manage the spread because we know it's going to spread. We're trying to take care of the vulnerable. I think you spoke a little bit about the education part of it. I question how much more education does people need that they're not getting right now? Because right here in Alligator Pond, if people tell you said they're not getting educated, them lie like a rug.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay?
But you have to understand too.
One of the things that I go ahead.
There are some persons they're like the very, very old. They don't understand what is happening around them because we even saw it on television where, as I said,
exactly
just water, you know. So
exactly.
Well, you know,
but guess what? Those old people, you know, there's one thing I'm watching every day. You know, I'm watching them CVM and I'm watching the TVG. Now I can tell you, this week I got totally upset with CVM. Call them. Spoke to the producer and said, look, you better retract that article that you ran in Alligator Pond with this man up against the back of Oswald's restaurant with four people behind him with a mask on, talking about how Alligator Pond is very well prepared for people to come in. And so I said, that was just a promotional by one of the leaders of this community that was trying to make it look like Alligator Pond is a safe place for everybody from outside of Alligator Pond to come in just to come by fish.
Yeah.
CBM carried that on their network. No, the fact is that reporter had to have walked through Alligator Pond Town, the same route that I walk every single day to go to town.
Mm-hmm.
And must have seen that everything that this man was saying was not true. But guess who our people are going to believe? And
right.
Those old people. I could be sitting right here beside one of those old people teaching them all of the things, you know. And let me tell you something. Here in Alligator Pond, I don't know about anywhere else. But Minister of Health, the public, expector, and everybody, they're in here every single day, and those are the people that they're going to a pamphlet, sitting down, talking to them, and explaining the whole thing to them.
Exactly.
So I don't know what's going on in the other part of the country, but I know in here in Alligator Pond, the education and the information and the Minister of Health is active in our community, and we have a lot of old people in our community because that's the type of community we have here.
Right. You know, I mean, you're right. So you're right. You touched many points. You know, from an educational standpoint, I mean, you know, Tufton and the rest of the ministers have actually done a fabulous job. I mean, outstanding. Jamaica really stands out.
And the CMO.
Yes, absolutely. Have just stood out. You know, but one of the problems with education is this. You know, you have to appreciate how people receive information, right? So the elderly, you know, little old 80-year-old man living up in, you know, the hills somewhere, like a young 20-year-old and, a vibrant 50-year-old, you know, all of them may hear the same message and receive it differently, okay?
Oh, yeah,
and
without a doubt, you're 100% correct.
And so
I think
it's important to make sure that, you know, that, you know, they may say the little old 8-year-old man and Tammy said it's ball, you know, so they receive it completely different. So you have to also make sure that once you give the message, there is a retention, right? So what you hear what I told you? What it mean to you? What we have to do, how you have to prevent. What you see, you have to make sure that
exactly.
they're because
exactly.
they can hear you. But it may not make sense
that
because
is,
if you,
that that
if
part
you
of education don't have to. Sorry, I'm sorry.
No. Because if you don't have a reference, if you live in a world that you never ever, you don't talk about health, you don't talk about medicine, you don't talk about bacteria, viruses. When someone comes to you and tells you about this, it absolutely make no sense.
No, not at this stage. I agree.
But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the public health people are doing the job that way, given the resources that we have here in Jamaica. Here's the problem. The family base is who needs to follow up with the elderly and everybody
yes.
else and let them understand truly. The
yes.
public health sector have no way of being able to do the details that you're mentioning
Absolutely.
Here. The
Absolutely.
Family members have to do it. They have to take over and take continuation
yes.
when that public health officer leaves. Because
yes.
let me tell you something. Too many people are talking about the cure, and the thing that everybody should be talking about right now is prevention.
Yes, absolutely. No, you're right. You're hitting everything on the head, and you're very right. And I mean, but I don't think that's unique to Jamaica. I mean, I think the public health resources.
No. Absolutely not. It's everywhere. I don't trust me. I'm one of the few people that will tell you that it's not just unique to my country because I'm going to tell you, no, we're no better than you. And we are handling this thing a lot better than most people are right now.
Right, yeah. No, it's not
despite,
unique to Jamaica. I mean, that's a problem.
Despite the fact that what do you think of the persons, them opening up the St. Catherine borders with so many persons from the community?
Well, let's look at it.
So
we have 31. We have 31 new cases since yesterday, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Only 11 is from St. Catherine, from that call center. So obviously the spread is somewhere else right now as well.
It's in Kingston and St. Catherine.
Right, but the thing about it, though, is that if you look, you cannot keep the parish shut down. The fact of the matter is the only way you would be able to do this thing by a shutdown is if you shut down the entire country. You can't do that because then you're going to have two problems.
Yeah,
you're going to have the problems of the virus that's going to spread anyway. You don't have the resource to enforce, which will have to enforce the entire country. But then you're going to have a second problem, which is a total collapse of the economy. I agree with the reopening with protocol.
Yes.
I don't think that you can just go reopen, but you need to start. We need to start reopening, man. We need to. I know right now, the river, by where I live right now in Alligator Pond, the fact of the matter is people were observing the orders. It's two times I called the police this morning to come down here. Now, Alligator Pond police can't keep coming down to the river.
No,
the time wears on, the people are going to violate more and more. So we have to come up with some middle ground. The thing people need to understand is we're trying to manage the spread.
Right.
We know it's going to spread, and we're managing it. And Jamaica is doing a fantastic job with managing the spread.
Well, the idea of flattening the curve is not the same as eradicating the virus. The flattening of the, you'll never, you know, I mean, as I said, the virus is going to be around for another few years. But
yes.
it's not eradicating the virus. The idea of flattening the curve is making it more manageable, as you said, such that the healthcare can, so that it is within the capacity of the healthcare environment.
One question, Doc.
Yes.
Is it a fact that as soon as it's about 2-3 years from now, they're allowing it to spread and spread, and so our bodies become immune. We build up a sort of immunity to this virus because that's the only way to help to keep it down, keep it from spreading.
We're not allowing. We can't stop it.
Right.
We have to allow it. Yeah. It will run its course.
Right. So what you're talking there is herd immunity. We talked about this a little bit earlier, and you know it takes over 50% of the population to be infected for you to achieve herd immunity.
So what that means
is basically herd immunity means that you know the virus is not eradicated, but if everybody around you is immune, then it's just going to die out. Okay,
right.
So because it has
exactly
it has nobody to infect, so it's just going to go away. And so You know, so that's one way of dealing with things. I mean, certainly there's only one country in the world, Sweden, who is currently really actively doing that. You know, there's a lot of casualties that you will have along the way. You know, but so eventually we will get there, but that will be a couple of years.
Yep, without a doubt. Well, thank you very much for taking my call, which wasn't really questions but more comments. Appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
I appreciate it.
Wonderful job.
Yes, somebody was, well, it has been a very interesting afternoon. And before I even think of going off, I might have a caller too. I'll take a break to hear some music. Let's see what kind of music. Just a break, Doc. And for the other listeners, just a break just now. I'll play some Desmond Decker, some old.
Think I never see you when you jump over the wall. You think I never see you when you accidentally fall. Me say, aye, make you poppy, you be darling. Why you accidentally falling? Is she crying out behind ice water?
Oh, that was a very short break I took. It has been a very interesting afternoon. We out here in Jamaica, we're trying our very best to take care of the elderly, regardless of whatever they're saying. As a matter of fact, we had some musicians who went up into the hills of St. Mary to help their elderly. They gave them care packages, and there are also some others who were planning to go other places. So it's not that they are totally isolated. One thing with us, we do take care of our own, you know. And so we have to try and do everything to maintain sanity. There's another issue. I'm concerned about school children because school has restarted, and they're using the Zoom system. How is it going to impact on children mentally? God, he knows, because I heard my granddaughter hollering that, oh, she's bored and she misses school and what am I going to do? And she has a lot of work to do, homework and all of that to do. But they get pent up in the house, and so sometimes I let them go swim them in the pool, which, you know, you have to sanitize even the pool before you use. Is it safe? That's one question I always wanted to find out from you, Doc. Is it safe to be using the pool, although it's sanitized and you use your acid and whatever in it before? Is it safe to swim?
It's safe to swim because of the chlorine and whatnot that you have in the pool. So it'll be safe to swim if you have the virus. But again, remember, though, that, you know, the virus is transmitted by droplets. So it's safe if you, from a contact standpoint, but if you are in the pool, if two people are in the pool and one coughs on the other, then you can get it that way.
Oh, yes, that's for sure. So that's why we don't go with others. It's just strictly
right.
Those from the household. And
right.
If anybody has a cold, they certainly would not be going inside that water, you know?
Yes, yes. Correct.
Yes.
But if it's a family,
yeah,
and they have a pool, and yeah, absolutely. It's safe. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So are you involved in any way at all with work that has to do with developing any vaccine?
No. No, very loosely, but not directly, no.
Okay. All right. We're involved in, as I said before, giving away scholarships to schools. So if by chance you know or you feel inclined to do so, you could always check out our website. I could send it to you after, or you could tell other Jamaicans. Is there, you have relatives living in Jamaica?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you have any concerns for them? Are they well?
Pardon?
Are you in, they're well in tune with what's happening? You have the elderly or whoever? Yeah.
Yes. Elderly, yes. And they're pretty much on very strict lockdown.
You have to. Yeah. Because you know the elderly are set in their ways, you know, and they sometimes they'll want to do their own thing. They'll go and do their own thing. So you know, we have to ensure that we keep them strictly locked down. Yeah. Because our prime minister said his parents are in Spanish Town and St. Catherine. And they are on the lockdown. They have strict orders not to go out anywhere at all, you know. So, you know, it's
right. Yeah.
Really,
oh, absolutely. If you can't keep them on the lockdown, it's just the safest thing to do. Even though borders open and things like that, and countries open and transport and moving around with them.
It's just the fear, you know, it's the fear that will keep them. And it will make them happy at home and do things for them to keep them happy. And they won't want to go anywhere because guess what? There is such a stigma. They have a lot of stigma. Persons are stigmatized out here too. Once they think you have it, if you sneeze, if you cough, everybody's looking around at you. Because we had a case where there was a young girl who died recently, last week. She died in childbirth. You heard about it?
Yes.
And they're still investigating, and that is one of the reasons why I'd asked you earlier if you think we have enough doctors and nurses and healthcare workers, because the hospitals, if they have enough proper training, because how could they be running around? This is a girl. She. The doctors came down, I understand, to perform the surgery, and they were told it's okay, they're going to Spanish Town. They couldn't handle it. She lost a liter of blood. And she was found on the floor subsequent, you know, to that, after giving birth to her baby.
Yes, I heard
so
about
it's really,
that.
Really, it's really, really very sad. And we don't, Jamaica doesn't have a system where EMS, we have an EMS system set up where we have the connection with the fire chief, the fire, the ambulance, and the hospital. We don't have that. It's just our ambulance personnel that feel that they must just drive we want. And just, you know, it's just recently, in a couple of years ago, that we had proper training how to manage the patient. Because they used to go holding my the two hands and the two legs and swing them onto a stretcher. So they've had training subsequent to all of that. But they need to put proper things in place.
That is why
I'm urging all callers, our listeners to donate to our funding account, which is with Palace. It's or to the CRS radio station, because we're the ones that give these scholarships. We need to invest in our young people because they're the future. The very life we save might be our own. You never can tell what's happening, because here it is now, we have a pandemic. And if our leader should ever get sick, the leader of Britain, Great Britain, got sick, and he didn't go anywhere for treatment. If our leader gets sick, he has to be treated here. There's no airplane, there's nothing, so we need to have good healthcare workers, good doctors, good nurses that want to stay in our country. Because most time what happens is that they leave. They leave for a better way of life. Whereas if we had it here, you know, I just don't know what else to do. We have to have flyers and go on campaigns to educate people, to let them know that that we need to have proper healthcare system out here. And I guess after this pandemic has eased down, they will see the light and they will want to really, really contribute and really help to push forward education, because that's the only way out of certain situations like poverty for one and the proper health care, you know? I really, really appreciate your time with us this afternoon, and it was very, very informative, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, and I'm sure your listeners, our listeners on the whole, they have appreciated listening to you and learning a lot from you.
And I hope I was able to contribute. You know, and this is such a vibrant topic, and unfortunately, we're learning every day. So, you know, whatever we thought yesterday may not necessarily be the case tomorrow. So, you know, it's important to stay, you know, stay in tune with the, you know, professionals in the environment, those who are responsible for education, and those, because, you know, it changes. The recommendations will change, and you know, the treatments, we didn't go into treatments, but certainly they're coming out, and there's a lot of controversy over that too. So just be aware.
Yes, I know. Persons are going to want to reject it. Persons might accept it gladly out of fear. But, you know, whatever they come with, I am sure that it is something that they have mulled over and they have worked hard to get it going, because I don't see persons just coming up with any more bleach to as a vaccine, you know. we really hope that this thing calms down. You know, but while we're at it, we have young minds to train, and so we have to do our part, you know, to give back or to teach them. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot of doctors coming out of this, because everybody, every young child will want to be a nurse or a healthcare worker because they saw what happened. Because we hear about what happened in 101 years ago with the flu, that pandemic. If you look at photographs, you'll realize that they're the same set of things that are being implemented, like social distancing and wearing your mask and keeping clean, basically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Back in 1918. Yeah, it was. And, you know.
And it lasted for 2 years.
Yes. Yes, it did.
And at that time, it was like they said 500 million persons were infected and 50 million died. That's a whole lot.
It is quite a few. So, you know, we didn't learn much. It took us still a while to get this together. You know, all that aside, you know, we still do need to practice these safeguards going forward, because this virus will be with us for some time here.
So how is it in Texas anyhow with the virus? What is it like?
You know, it hasn't been as rampant as officials had as we had thought. Many parts of Texas, Houston in particular, has really done global testing, and so that's a good thing. The problem that we're going to have in the states, in any country actually, well, most countries, is the rural America, rural parts of the country. So, so that's going to be our sort of second phase, is the rural parts. And we haven't really exactly seen that yet.
You say rural, but New York is certainly not rural, and look at what's happening there.
Right. No. Well, one of the problems, so we have different things. So density is a big issue. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what we noticed here is the places that have very high density of people are the places that have been massively affected. Of course, New York is one of the top on that list. Seattle was an epicenter. Seattle is not known to be terribly dense, their aggregate of people were in a small sector. So density. So when you look at the various different maps, when you look at heat maps around the country, and you'll see the places that are that either are affected or will get affected are generally those that they have that high level of density. For example, New Orleans. New Orleans is another one that came up on the map because
of
the high density. But outside of the high density, the next phase, will be, unless, of course, we really do mass screening and mass testing, not screening, but mass testing. Because, these folks are not, the problem, reason is because these folks may not necessarily be able to get to the healthcare industry, the healthcare facilities in a timely manner. So it's not that they may get more infected, it's just that they'll have more of a devastating outcome because they may not necessarily be able to get to the facilities in a timely manner. A lot of times the hospitals and stuff that are in some of these rural areas right now are seriously financially impacted.
Pardon me, Dr. Shaw. We are running out of time. It has been so nice having you. I can't describe it. It was delicious having you on this Sunday afternoon. We have learned a lot, and I'm sure our callers and listeners have also learned. So
I've enjoyed it.
Keep tuning in. I'm happy that you did. Keep tuning in, and feel free to call any Sunday. Feel free.
All right.
And you take very good care of yourself and your family. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to all my callers. I thank you. I thank you. And blessings. Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. That was Dr. Shaw. Very, very informative show. She had a lot to lot of information to give to us, you know. And I'm happy to have had her. And I hope that other persons have learned a lot. Let me just play something before I leave on the wall.
Does it have to be there still?
Afternoon with the questions, and I've had several callers who were trying to get on, and I'm sure they have questions that they would like to ask. But in the meanwhile, I would just like to remind you, everyone, that as the doctor said, we cannot get rid of the virus. It's going nowhere. What we have to try and do is maintain a clean atmosphere, proper hygiene. You do your social distancing. So what more can I tell you? We have come to the end of another beautiful afternoon. So I'll see you next Sunday. Thank you all for calling. Thank you.